Troops, welcome back to our nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Troops, please do send me your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. It's an honor to welcome retired Army Colonel and a fellow West Pointer, Chris Kalinda. He's got a PhD. He served as a trusted advisor to 3 or 4 star generals and 2 undersecretaries of defense, and became the first American to have both fought the Taliban as a commander in combat and negotiated with them in peace talks. I can't even imagine that. Today, he runs the Strategic Leaders Academy, a consulting firm that helps veterans and their family members build joyful, profitable businesses. He's the founder of the Saber 6 Foundation in Milwaukee, a 501c3 nonprofit that helps the 800 paratroopers from his Afghan military unit, the 1st of the 91st Cav and the 173rd Airborne Division, also known as Task Force Saber, stay alive and thrive. So this guy hasn't stopped being a leader taking care of the troops. And he's written books and been featured in a lot of media. Enough of that. Welcome, Chris. Glad you could join us, bro.
Thanks, Danny. I appreciate you having me on your show.
Chris, start by telling us about why you decided to go to West Point. What gave you that idea? And then talk a bit about your career in Mother Army.
Well, I went a bit kicking and screaming into it. I wanted to go to college on a baseball scholarship. And my parents said, just apply to the academies and just keep your options open. So I was like, fine, whatever. And I mean, West Point intrigued me. And then the day I graduated from high school, I get a call from the senator's office saying, hey, you've been appointed to the military academy. Do you want to accept it? And my 17-year-old thought process was, well, if I go and I don't like it, I can always leave. But if I don't go, then I'll always wonder, could I have made it? So I said yes, and I went. And never looked back. I mean, I thrived there at West Point, and took the same attitude in the Army. I wanted to see what it was like, kept an open mind, and wound up staying 24 and a half years.
Well, I know what you're talking about. I did want to go to West Point. I don't know why. I'm the first person in my family to ever wear the military uniform. But I wanted to be in the Army, and I wanted to go to West Point. And it took me a couple of attempts, but I did. And I liked it. Didn't need to stay forever. Stayed 22 years. We got a lot in common. Okay. What did you do in the Army? What branch? What were some of your good assignments?
Yeah, I was a cavalryman in the Army. So I started off, first assignment was along the old east-west German border. So 88 to 91 was on the old east-west German border. I mean, watching East Germans and Soviets across the fence. It was absolutely fascinating. Being there when the fence opened up between East and West Germany was an experience I will never forget, seeing these little East German cars called Trabants. They're little small matchbook, kind of cars, very tiny, didn't run very fast, can only go about 50 miles an hour full out. But they were lined up to the horizon, waiting for the fence to open up between East and West Germany, and would come across, and the West Germans would give them 50 West marks, which was like a month's pay for an East German, just for coming across. And oh my goodness, all the fresh fruit was sold out of the markets. All of the meat was sold out. McDonald's within the 10-kilometer zone, you couldn't get a Big Mac or a McDonald's fries because they were completely cleaned out. It was utterly amazing. And then I served just in a variety of assignments, cavalry assignments, wind up teaching at West Point for 3 years in the history department. And then was leading this group of 800 paratroopers in Afghanistan for a 15-month deployment, 2007 and 2008. And then wound up being senior advisor to 3 4-star generals and 2 undersecretaries of defense and some of the stuff that you read in my bio. And then finally, I was asked by the secretary to be his personal representative in the talks with the Taliban. And I agreed to do that, but that meant declining a brigade level command, retiring from the military, and becoming a Department of Defense civilian. So I did that for about 2.5 years, found that we just have a really hard time getting our act together as a government, and resigned in 2014 and started my own consulting business.
Okay. That sounds like you weren't bored.
No.
but by the way, you've got a PhD. When and where did you get it, and in what?
So I got a PhD from King's College in war studies, and I did the PhD starting in 2014. So they wanted to bring a practitioner on the faculty, and they said, if you teach a class on contemporary war, we'll waive the tuition on a PhD. That sounds like a fair trade to me. So I went to London and did my dissertation. I focused on why big U.S. military interventions turned into fiascos. And I looked at Vietnam, Afghanistan, and Iraq, and looked for the common errors that we make, the self-inflicted errors that we make. Of course, each of the three situations was different, but the errors that we make were very common. You know, if you one time is an accident, two times is a coincidence, three times you've got a trend. Well, we've got three times. Mm-hmm. And so I eventually turned it into my latest book, which is called Zero Sum Victory: What We're Getting Wrong About War, which just won a national book award.
We'll have to have you back on to discuss that book.
I'd love to. Yeah.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Colonel Chris Colenda. Talk to us about the Saber 6 Foundation. You really are concerned, and are more than concerned. You're doing something about taking care of your troops, right?
Yeah. You know, they're entering the most dangerous days of their lives. And we're coming up on the 15-year anniversary of that deployment. And I always want to do something significant to honor their service and sacrifice. And so part of that entailed visiting the graves of the six troopers from our unit who were killed in action during that deployment. And they are buried from Nebraska, essentially due east, all the way to Arlington National Cemetery. It's about 1,700 miles. And I thought, I could drive to visit each of their graves. That just didn't seem substantial enough. I could walk the distance. I'm capable of doing that, but it just take way too long. And so I thought, I know what I could do. I could ride a bicycle. I bet I could ride a bike 1,700 miles to visit their graves. And so I decided I was going to do that. The only problems were that I didn't own a bicycle and I hadn't ridden a bicycle in over 20 years. So I said to myself, you know, I'm not getting any younger. This is April of 2021, not getting any younger. So if I'm going to do this, it's time to do it now. So I went out and bought a road bike. I hired a cycling coach to get my butt in shape, and I started telling people so I don't chicken out. So I just finished the ride, a little over a month ago. And I thought, you know, we could do some good with this. I think, we have, and do some good raising funds to take care of the 800 survivors and their families who need help. This group of 800, they're entering the most dangerous days of their lives. And it's because of a combination of post-traumatic stress, which we all have. If you served in close combat and you know exactly what I'm talking about, you've got post-traumatic stress. You've experienced that. Midlife. So there's a thing called a happiness curve that looks like a U. At the top of the happiness curve on the left side is age 20. And on the other side is your early 60s. The bottom of the U is age 47. So we commonly refer to it as midlife crisis. And then the third element of this very dangerous combination is a sense of drift, where you don't quite have that same purpose and belonging. You have a hard time recovering it. You maybe had it in the military, you don't have it now. And so those three factors, post-traumatic stress, midlife crisis, and drift, or the sense of emptiness, is a very deadly combination. We've now lost more to suicide and overdoses than to enemy fire.
There's more to talk about Saber 6 Foundation, and Chris is going to stay with us. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's push-up time. I want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do most days. Then take a break or stay in the area. Chris and I will be right back. The This is Colonel Danny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Colonel Chris Kalenda. Chris, we were talking about the Saber 6 Foundation, and you were talking about the key things that seem to cause your troops, I guess everybody, but particularly your troops and guys who have been in combat together, to, shall we say, end their lives early?
Right.
Wrap that one up for us. You've identified the issues. Remind us of them again and what the solution is.
Yeah, so it's a combination of post-traumatic stress, midlife crisis, and a sense of drift or the sense of emptiness. You're lacking purpose and belonging. You know, some people are able to find new purpose and belonging, make that pivot, and you know, this foundation is going to help them soar to new heights. There are a lot of people who are struggling with these issues, and it's only going to get worse. The average demographic of this group of 800 is age 35 to 45. So they're entering the danger zone. And we want to help them find new purpose, belonging, and wellness so they can soar to new heights. And then finally, there's some who are in a very bad situation, drifted for a long time. We've got one of our best non-commissioned officers from 2007, top 1% guy who, you know, now lives in a dumpster. And he's a meth addict. And he's one of several stories. I can't know that people who had my back for 15 months in combat are going through this and not try to do something about it. So that's why I set up the Saber 6 Foundation. And the 1,700-mile bicycle ride was to honor the dead and then support the living.
Okay. If people want to learn more about the Saber 6 Foundation, I presume there's a website?
Yeah, you can go to sabersixfoundation.com or honorride.us, and you'll find all about the Saber 6 Foundation, what we're all about, what we're doing to help, and then a little bit about how you can support us.
Great. Now, I want to talk about the Strategic Leaders Academy. That sounds awesome. Take us there.
Well, when I set up my own consulting business in 2014, I wanted to help people. You learn a lot about leadership in the military. One of the life experiences I had growing up, I was scrawny and awkward in high school. And the more I tried to fit in, the more awkward I became. And that made me a target for bullies. It made me target for, molesting. And, you know, I said to myself, you know, one of the things that attracted me to West Point was, I never wanted to feel like that again. And, you know, being at West Point would help me do that and would also help me lead in a way so that nobody under my leadership, nobody under my command would ever feel that way either. And setting up a leadership consulting business helps me to help other leaders make sure that the most vulnerable people in their companies, in their formations, never have to feel that way also, that they can be their best and contribute their best to the team's success and do so confidently that they're going to be taken care of. So that's why I set up a leadership consulting business. And you know, there are a lot of veterans who feel like I do, who have so much to contribute, who would be great consultants, but just don't know where to start. And so SLA also helps veterans set up a meaningful, joyful, and profitable consulting business so that they can continue to serve for the common good.
That is awesome. I've done some leadership consulting. And if you're paying attention at all, you learn a lot about leadership, both positive and negative leadership. Yes, I want to be like him, and no, I don't want to be like him in the military. And it's virtually all transferable to the civilian life. You got to take the combat out of it, but the leadership is the leadership. And it really is being focused on the mission and taking care of the troops. And you really got a handle on that. That's for sure.
I like to say there's no such thing as military leadership. There's just leadership. Uh-huh. And it's applied in a different context. But you're right. The principles are all the same. I mean, one of the ones that you mentioned earlier about, I want to be like this person, I don't want to be like that person, is the importance of leaders setting the example, being exemplars for the kind of performance and values and behavior that they want everybody else to follow. If you go to a Civil War battlefield, I know you've been to them, you see a lot of leaders on horseback, statues of leaders on horseback. And the reason why leaders were on horseback in the Civil War is not because they were lazy or privileged, a little bit because they could see better, but mostly it was because they were the most vulnerable person on the battlefield, and very deliberately making themselves the most vulnerable person on the battlefield. Everybody's shooting at them. If you're on a horse, everybody's shooting at you. Well, and the message is, if I can stand my ground and I can do my job, so can everybody else.
You know, that's a good point. When you're on a horse in that kind of an environment, yes, you can see better, but you can also be seen better by the enemy and by mm-hmm. your troops. And that's the issue.
Right. You look at the difference between Afghanistan and Iraq. Afghanistan, when push came to shove, senior Afghan leaders just seemed to steal away in the middle of the night, take the money and run. And the whole thing collapsed immediately afterwards. And then you look at the Zelensky in Ukraine. When he was offered a ride out of there, he said, "I don't want a ride. I want more ammo." And his willingness to stand his ground, to set the example, is a key reason why the Ukrainian forces have rallied like they have, fought the Russians to a standstill, and now pushing them back.
Yes, sir. Chris, one of the things that you have pushed in everything I've read about is, how should we treat veterans right? We've only got a couple of minutes left, but mm-hmm. make a couple of points of things that you think we really want our listeners to take away from our conversation today.
Yeah, let's have better conversations. Let's actually build a bridge. Let's actually communicate with our veterans and vice versa. You know, right now this gulf has grown so large that, you know, civilians will say, "Thank you for your service." And it's like, "Well, you have no idea what I did in the service. How can you thank me?" And then veterans now saying, "Well, thank you for your support," having no idea what that person might have done or not done. And those, they just end conversations. They don't create any more understanding. What we need to do is just start engaging with our veterans more productively. "Oh, what did you do in the service? Tell me a little bit about that. Where did you serve? What is the best experience that you had in the service?" Just those sort of simple questions build a bridge, build some common understanding, let a person know that what they did was actually appreciated. And if you're a veteran, talk about it. It's not only good for you, it's also good for society to talk a little bit about what they serve and let people know the richness of military service and why, you know, why it's so beneficial to America.
Yes, sir. Take one more minute now and talk about how every veteran can find new purpose and belonging, stay alive and thrive. That's something that I know that the Strategic Leader Academy is about. Mention that.
Yeah, I think having a sense of purpose, being willing to look through the windshield rather than a rearview mirror is absolutely vital. So what are you living for? What is your next goal in life? What is the next impact that you're going to make? Because your impact is worth making and your life is worth living. So in each of these situations, hardship situations, people who are willing to look through the windshield and believe that they've got a why for the future and plan that out are always more successful. You call it post-traumatic success. And then find new belonging, whether it's with other veterans groups, other community groups, a place where you feel like you can fit in, and then diet and exercise. I mean, those three, purpose, belonging, and wellness are very powerful and are going to help people live a life of ascendance where their best days are always in front of them.
Wow, do I agree with you. Chris, that's wonderful. How can listeners plug into the Strategic Leaders Academy?
The best way is to go to our website, strategicleadersacademy.com. You find ways to get in contact with me. I'm on social media, so LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, et cetera. Pretty easy to find there. And always respond over email, chris@strategicleadersacademy.com. So I'm pretty easy to get a hold of, pretty responsive.
Sounds good. Thank you, Chris, for joining us today. Thank you for your service to our nation in uniform and for what you're doing now. I'm really, really impressed. That's awesome.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to be on your show.